Stu Grimson. He was with the NHL Network, longtime NHL player, commentator. Good morning, Stu Grimson.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How's everybody back in Nash Vegas?
Our power play here is just as good as the Predators. Just let you know that we haven't scored a power play in the postseason, but neither have they.
Well, that's great news. I mean, it can only go up from there. You can't fall off the floor, lads. You can't fall off the floor. It can only go up from there.
I don't think we should be. We're surprised with this, quite frankly, because of what we saw of this team the last 2 months of the season.
Don't disagree. If what we're doing this morning is an autopsy, I mean, I am not a medical coroner, but for purposes of this segment, I can sure play one. And let me tell you what you do. The first stage of an autopsy is you remove the vital organs and you evaluate them. Pekka was good. I mean, I thought Pekka had a really strong series, with the exception of game four, and he very quickly bounced back from that one. And listen, you could point to any goaltending performance throughout the league, and there are those moments, even in the context of a series where a team goes on to win, a winning goaltender may not have a great outing in one of those games. And Pekka, I thought on balance, played really solid. Roman Josi and PK Subban, not the best hockey I've seen them play. Matthias Ekholm and Ryan Ellis as well, not the best hockey I've seen them play. We are fond of saying, those that follow the Predators for a living, they boast one of the brightest defense corps in all the game. Not only are they skilled on the offensive side of the puck, they defend exceptionally well. There were holes. The Nashville defense, in my estimation, was somewhat porous. And, you know, focusing on, finally, the forward position, the Jofa line. I mean, you really look to your top line. They've got to carry the lion's share. They've got to do the heavy lifting where the offensive production is concerned. And the Stars found a way to neutralize the Jofa line. Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson, all three, and certainly collectively, look like a shadow of their true selves, in my estimation. And, you know, give a lot of credit to the other side, you guys. They got a top-end performance from their top line. And what I think is interesting about this Dallas club is as this season unfolds, yes, Sagan, Radulov, Ben, they're fantastic. They're dynamic. They prove that. But you're seeing the Dickinsons and the Hintzes and the Klingbergs and the Heiskanens of their roster. You're seeing these guys mature in front of their very eyes, and they had, in my estimation, just a really, really strong series, some of their best hockey of the year. So, you know, it's not a one-part explanation, but that's really, you know, in a thumbnail sketch, that's kind of what I saw happen.
Well, I'm going to say this. Here's the disclaimer. This interview was set up before the game last night, so we didn't have you here just for the autopsy. We had you here to possibly discuss a Game 7 as well, so I want to clear that up. But I do tell you that if you ever needed to know anything, of all the way this team played, entire series, with 1:53 to go, Game 7 was handed to them on a platter. Como, Tripp, Smith, and so you have a power play, and you're thinking, okay, you're 0 for 14. Just get one power play goal, and you're on to Game 7. And I think that right there, that 1 minute and 53 seconds, of course the 7 carried over, was, in a nutshell, the frustration I think people have with this team.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. You know, during the regular season, and we've made this point several times, you guys, during the regular season, you can live without a really strong, a really dangerous power play. You can get by without that. It comes down to 5-on-5 play. But during the during the playoffs, in the context of a 7-game series, no, you're not going to get a goal from your power play every night, but there are moments in games when you do get one, they can turn a game, they can turn a series. And I think you highlight one, Greg, a moment in this series where had Nashville been able to generate one, to get one behind Bishop, you might be talking about, you know, surviving and living to fight another day which would be back at Bridgestone in a game seven. I completely agree with you.
Stu Grimson with us, NHL Network.
Stu, when you look at this from where you are outside the bubble of Nashville, what was the absolute most frustrating thing? And let's get rid of the – we're done talking about the power play. What's the absolute most frustrating thing you saw from this hockey team, from the Predators?
Well, you know, for me, and I think this has long kind of been the aspect of the Predators that has dogged this team, they fail to – we're all very fond of saying – defense wins championships. I mean, it's important without question, but I don't know a lot of champions that won 1-0 hockey games exclusively on their way to holding up the top prize at the end of the year. You have to be able to score. And, you know, regretfully for the Preds, I think secondary scoring, second-tier scoring was a problem all through the regular season. Peter Laviolette was constantly looking for line combinations from the Turris line on down that worked for them, that could provide some meaningful depth scoring. So that's not there as you enter the playoffs. It never materialized as the playoffs unfold. And then add to that, the Jofa line really had a difficult time getting on the board. I credit, you know, a large part of that came by way of the Dallas Stars. I thought defensively, and Bishop himself in the net for the Dallas Stars, I thought he did a fantastic job kind of holding that top group off the line as well. When they did occasionally break down the Dallas D-core, Bishop was up to the challenge. He really was.
How many times did you drop your jaw at Pekka Arena? You've seen it for a long time, Stu, but last night he was spectacular, and if not for him, it might have been 8-0.
Yeah, and you know what? It thrills me. I hate to see the Preds go down early, but at the end of the day, he's such a good guy, and he's such a determined athlete. He's incredibly flexible. He is a great athlete at the end of the day. A thing that kind of, an aspect of Pekka that really goes underappreciated at times, but he played just some exceptional goal for the Predators last night and gave them every opportunity to have it go a different direction. So Big Joe, I am with you.
Stu Grimson with us, as his Twitter handle says, former NHLer, hockey analyst at NHL Network, corporate counsel at Van Meter Insurance Group, business development. Congratulations, Stu.
Well, hey, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
That's a Houchens Industries business based out of my hometown of Bowling Green, so I'm always going to plug Van Meter. You know that.
They're a good crew. Lots of good people.
I grew up with exactly knowing where Van Meter Insurance started in Bowling Green. That's amazing. At A.S. Grimson on Twitter, what about all that old saying, you can't fire players, you fire coaches, right? Or managers or whatever. The narrative that Peter Laviolette's message gets whatever after 5 years, and maybe it's Kevin McCarthy who's been with him every step of the way, I don't know. But is there some substance to that a coach's approach wears on players or whatever it might be? Because it just seems like that's the narrative that has always followed Peter Laviolette.
Oh, I think it's only human nature. You know, the longer a group of athletes, you know, early 20s, mid-20s, sometimes early 30s, the longer you've got a single voice in the context of that locker room that's carrying the message, you know, athletes are like anybody else. They can sometimes become somewhat aloof or desensitized or turn the sound off and tune out. That's entirely possible. Having said all that, and the circumstances are certainly such that it gives that whole concept credence right now at this moment, Greg. But for me, you know, two things really come to I think for me address this aspect. Peter Laviolette is among the best bench bosses in all of the NHL. You look at the difference he made. The moment he stepped behind the bench, this team was going in another direction. And I think really, since that moment, you are talking about the Nashville Predators as having a legitimate chance to compete for the top prize each and every year almost without exception, under Peter Laviolette's administration. The other thing that I would add to that is that David Poile has proven over the course of his career as a manager, he is very slow to make that change. Barry Trotz was, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, Barry was 16, perhaps 17 years or so under as the head coach of the National mm-hmm. Predators. I think that David would be very slow to make that change, and the circumstances would have to be probably far more grave or compelling before he did remove Peter. I don't see that as the solution today to their problem.
Stu, we're having a meltdown, obviously, here in Nashville, but you look around the league. Tampa, the city's having a meltdown, what happened. Calgary's having a meltdown, what's happened. I mean, it's
Winnipeg.
So it's just the competition is difficult now in the NHL. If you're going to win the Stanley Cup, you've earned the right to take that cup home. So although we're upset here in Nashville, this is kind of what's going on in the league right now. Every team's pretty much equal.
Yeah, well, and the interesting thing, and I plan to kind of do a good bit on this afternoon on NHL Network, but, you know, Joe, we're fond of saying in hockey that the way you're playing down the stretch, that last block of games, the stretch drive, are critical and often a great indication of how you're going to perform in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And really, again, you know, as upside down as this season, this first round has been, that adage kind of bears out. Colorado upsets the Calgary Flames. Colorado was 7-1-2 down the stretch. By contrast, Calgary just kind of meandered their way down that final stretch, 6-4-0. Another great example is St. Louis over Winnipeg. Winnipeg kind of limped to the finish line. Their game was wonky, really, almost through the entire second half. They were 4-5-1 down the last 10 games of the season. St. Louis ranks among one of the best stories in all the NHL. They were a house ablaze from January 3rd on. And the last 10 games of the year, guys, they were 8-1-1. So when you end up going into the postseason, you're playing some of your most urgent, most desperate, most inspired hockey of the season. And the higher seed is, you know, just kind of coasting into the postseason. It sets up for an emotional mismatch. I don't think that it really applies as strongly where Nashville and Dallas are concerned, but, you know, it's at least a factor.
Well, we got two game sevens tonight, one tomorrow night. Almost had two game sevens tomorrow night. It's fun. So when can we see you on the NHL Network again?
4 to 6 Eastern time. That's 3 to 5 Central time. We'll be on. We'll be breaking down the carnage from last night, and we'll be talking about and highlighting, previewing some of the matchups tonight. Boston-Toronto Game 7 is going to be fantastic. A long and storied history between these two teams and San Jose and Vegas. I know you guys are both a little longer in the tooth. It might be kind of hard to be up late for that one as it closes out. But that's been a really exciting series as well. But, I mean, I have no favorite team anymore, you guys. I'm a student of the game. All I want to see is Game 7, so I am reveling in my element tonight.
Two tonight, Leafs and the Bruins, Golden Knights and the Sharks, and then tomorrow night, Hurricanes, Capitals. And so should be fun. Stu, always a pleasure. Thank you, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.